Hey, what's up, everybody? Mike the Rotocop here for Friends of Fantasy Benefits, joined as always by Randy Haynes and Colin Weatherwax. I'm coming from Costa Rica. Randy's coming from a bachelor party, a wedding that he got a ticket from. I'm sorry I couldn't help you out with that one, Randy. So we haven't really been on top of baseball as much as we'd like to be, but we caught up with everything by now. And one huge thing that happened, and I even got this when I was in Costa Rica, Ronnie Acuña gets called up, and I was like, I can't believe I'm in another country when this happens, because I couldn't even watch the game. I couldn't get any service on my phone. I just happened to see it. So, Colin, I know you watched Acuña's debut. Now he's 10 for 24 a week later. What have you seen from him so far?
He's been everything as advertised. I mean, he's a spark plug. He's like a taller, stronger Ozzie Albies. I mean, dogging everyone for drafting him so high, like I did the whole preseason. I'm looking a little bad about that, but I know a lot of people in our chat were kind of like, you know, I don't think that he would be called up as quickly as most people were hoping, especially drafting him in the eighth or ninth round, but. Right now, I mean, he's lighting the world on fire, and you're probably benefiting from that eighth or ninth round pick if you're patient enough.
And I remember in the group chat after those TGFBI drafts that we were giving Smata a hard time for drafting Acuña where he did, and I was one of those guys along with you that said Acuña's not going to give you enough numbers this year to justify picking him in the ninth or tenth round. Turns out we're going to be dreadfully wrong on that one. Randy, what are your thoughts here on Acuña so far?
Yeah, he looks great, Colin. Yeah, Colin nailed it there. You know, he's already, you know, in a week put up more production than some players have in 5.5 weeks. So it's you know, if you were able to, you know, weather the storm waiting for him, it was well worth it. And I'm excited going forward. Obviously, he's not going to hit 400 all year. At least I don't think so. And yeah, hopefully that stays up. You know, once the league starts to adjust, maybe he can readjust and end up with a pretty good season. I would expect, you know, I don't think it's crazy to say he could go 20-20 this year. You know, at the top of that Braves lineup, he already got moved up to second. You know, maybe he gets to 80-ish runs. Maybe he can drive in 70 and go 20-20. What do you guys think?
Well, we saw yesterday that he hit Syndergaard, and if you could hit Syndergaard, you could pretty much hit anyone in baseball. And all the Statcast numbers on Acuña have been through the roof, like his sprint speed, his hard hit, the miles per hour on his exit velo. Everything's been skyrocketing for Acuña so far. So it seems like he's the real deal, and he's really going to make an impact on fantasy and in Major League Baseball. Colin?
Yeah, I think so. I mean, you know, I watched his debut, and the first two at bats, I think he was just very yippy. But even though he was yippy, he swung on the first pitch on both times. He flied out to the warning track both times, and it looked so effortless. So then, whenever his first home run came, you know, it looked effortless, and it went into the upper deck, and I was just amazed. And then whenever you see him running the base paths, he looks faster than everybody. So whenever you have a guy that has the dual threat of speed and power, I mean, he's going to be fun. And that Braves team, top of the lineup with Albies, Acuña, and Freeman, I mean, it's going to be hard to get through the heart of that order.
Yeah, so we're going to talk about injuries on the show, some other news that's going on in baseball. I just wanted to touch on Acuña real quick. I know most other podcasts have covered that by now. We didn't really get a chance to. Another Braves youngster that got called up was Soroka, who went 6 innings, 1 earned run, 5 strikeouts yesterday against the Mets, and he looked great. And I'm thinking about spending a lot of fab on him this week because, like we'll get to later in the show, Jordan Montgomery, who I have 100% shares of, is out for up to 2 months now. So I'm thinking about going to get Soroka and spending a lot of fab on him, which I know it's going to cost. Randy, how do you feel about that?
Yeah, I got to see a good bit of his start last night. He looks really good. You know, he's got a really nice two-seamer, sinker as well. You know, throws hard enough. Seems to have a really good, you know, command of the strike zone already. Seems to be a pretty intelligent pitcher, at least based off of one start and everything I've read scouting report-wise. The problem is if he continues to pitch this well, obviously the Braves don't have a choice. They need to throw him out there because they're off to a good enough start and they could find themselves competing for a wild card. But as of right now, Anibal Sanchez, unfortunately, is coming back this weekend, and he had pitched, I guess, well enough to maybe earn, you know, another crack at a starting job. But we also have kind of forgotten about Luis Gohara sitting in the minors, and he needs to be up. You know, Brandon McCarthy can always get hurt, but he's pitching well right now. So I guess I'm kind of tempering my expectations in terms of the number of starts from Soroka. You know, maybe we only get you know, maybe we only get 15 starts from him the rest of the way. I do think they're going to be good. But I, like I said, I would at least temper the number of starts as of now, unless the Braves like end up making a trade or if somebody, you know, has a significant injury that's already in that rotation.
So let me ask you a question, Randy. Last week, also, Nick Kingham for the Pirates made his debut. He went 7 innings, no runs. They announced that he's going to be in the rotation going forward. And he pitched on Sunday, I believe, so he wasn't really registered. I know he wasn't registered on NFBC, so you couldn't pick him up until this upcoming Sunday. So you're somebody like me who lost Montgomery, and you're choosing between Soroka and Kingham for pretty much a good portion of your fab here. Which one are you going with?
I mean, I would bid on both, obviously, but I guess I would go a little more heavy towards Kingham because they had an easy fix. They moved Stephen Brault to the bullpen, you know, no damage done there. But again, if Soroka stumbles a little bit, they have options there that they could throw in, and there's no guarantee that he's going to get, you know, the next start. There's a rumor that they might give him another crack this weekend against the Giants in one of those games. So, you know, Soroka, I think, is the better talent, and maybe it's one of those things where talent just ends up winning out. But I do think I would be surprised if Soroka started more games the rest of the way than Kingham.
Colin, same question to you.
Yeah, I think I'm going to agree with Randy here. Soroka definitely has the prospect pedigree. He's definitely the better pitcher at this moment. However, it might come down to who's going to give you more starts throughout the year. And for my take would probably be Kingham as well, although it should be Soroka. I mean, I watched his start, and that sinker, I mean, it just falls off the table. It comes, you know, about belt high, and it ends up around the ankles at 95 miles per hour. So it's just insane. You know, I hope one day we'll live in a world where the best prospects or best players actually get to play in the major leagues. I hope that they don't get sent down for whatever reason and just a veteran automatically takes their spot just because they're a veteran. So I think for you, Mike, I think in the leagues that you play in where you use FAB, I think someone will probably pay an enormous amount on Soroka. So it's probably someone that you won't be getting. You might want to focus your FAB on Kingham, I think.
Yeah, that's what I'm leaning towards, because Soroka's hype is so much bigger than Kingham's that Soroka's going to get a lot of money pushed behind him as far as FAB goes. So I really got to divulge into the numbers to see how that's going to play out. While we're on the Montgomery topic, he's going to be out for up to 2 months, and this was a pretty serious injury for a guy who seemed like he was turning the corner. He's been pitching a little better as of late. Everybody had big expectations for him this year. Colin, what do you think about Domingo Germán or anybody else that the Yankees might consider calling up, whether it's Justice Sheffield? How are they going to replace this, or are they replace this loss? Are they going to go out and get a starter? What do you think?
I don't think they'll go out and get a starter. I'm also not too sure on Germán. I want to see it, you know, out of a starter role. I know he came in for Montgomery yesterday and kind of finished out that game, gave him, I think, almost 7 innings of good run or good baseball. But, you know, it's hard for Montgomery. I know it's hard for you, Mike. I'm surprised you're still standing because, like you said, you have him everywhere. You know, and he was poised for a breakout. We were all on him in the preseason, so it's heartbreaking for sure. I think Chance Adams might get, you know, the best crack at it if they actually call him up from the minor leagues. I don't think Justice Sheffield is ready yet. And I don't think that they can go out and make a trade this early in the season, even though Sonny Gray's been struggling so far and Tanaka has his issues as well. But I think they're going to kind of ride it with the guys that they have, see where they are at the trade deadline, and then they'll try and make a move then.
Well, Herman's going to start on Sunday, they said, so we'll see how he does. One thing I've heard, I don't know if you guys heard this as well, was the Sonny Gray, Patrick Corbin rumors, which doesn't make much sense for the Diamondbacks as of now, getting rid of Corbin. Well, I mean, unless they think he's going to regress. Have you heard anything about that, Randy?
I heard the rumor, but it doesn't make really any sense. I mean, the Diamondbacks, they were in the playoffs last year. They're, you know, they've done nothing so far this season, you know, to make anyone think they won't be at least competing for a playoff spot again this year. And Corbin just flat out might be better than Sonny Gray, so that doesn't really make a lot of sense to me. You know, as far as Montgomery goes, you know, Germán is somebody that's interesting. He pitched well when he came in, you know, kind of a quick relief last night for Montgomery. But I don't know if I'm going. I'd add him in a really deep league, you know, anything bigger than 15 team. But I don't know if I'm eager to use him. His first start of the season is going to be against the Indians, and watching what they've done the last couple of days against Collins Rangers. You know, it doesn't, that's kind of a scary landing spot for him. If Montgomery, if he's out you know, anything longer than 2 months, or if he has a setback while he's recovering from this injury, I do think the Yankees are the Yankees, and they're going to go out and trade for a starter. They might even anyway, if Montgomery's back on the short side of that injury timeline. So, you know, it's a big blow. It's a big blow to Montgomery, somebody that we liked. I know you've got a lot of shares, but as far as Herman, I keep an eye on him, but I'm not eager to go out and get him because we just named all the other options that they have: Adams and Sheffield. And, you know, maybe this is, you know, maybe they try to stretch Chad Green back out if they think, or they're the Yankees. They'll go out and trade for somebody. So I wouldn't rush out to get Herman yet.
Yeah, I mean, if you're going by track record, that seems to be the case. They'll go out and get somebody and they'll be just fine. But that injury does hurt for the time being. A couple more injuries. Some happened while I was away. Some happened when I got back. Corey Seager is out for the year with Tommy John. And this is brutal for the Dodgers, who are in a terrible position right now. They're not even close to the wild. I know it's only been 30-something games, but they're not even close to the wild card right now. They've been struggling as a team, and he's kind of the heartbeat of the offense, him and Justin Turner, and that puts both of them out. Logan Forsythe's hurt. They got a couple key players here that are injured. Puig's on the DL. Colin, what do you make of this situation here with Seager being out and the Dodgers as a whole?
It's terrible for Corey Seager. I mean, I'm a fan of his. I didn't draft him anywhere, luckily, because I was nervous about the back and the hip injuries coming into the season, and then watching him try and throw from shortstop a couple days ago, I could tell something was wrong. I was hoping it wasn't his back or hip, and then I hear it's Tommy John, and that's just even worse. So as far as the Dodgers, you know, Corey Seager, like you said, heart of the lineup, gets on base, you know, drives everyone in, has a great average, and then Justin Turner being on the DL doesn't help their offense as well. I do like the prospects of Alex Verdugo getting some playing time now. I think that they can, like they've shown, you know, in the first couple days since Seager got hurt, they're going to play Chris Taylor at shortstop, which I don't think he's played since he was in Seattle. But, you know, he is that versatile guy, and they're still going to bat him leadoff. So that does open the playing time for Verdugo, and while Puig's on the DL as well. So I think as a whole, like you said, Mike, I think the Dodgers are going to have a tough time making the playoffs, making the wild card, unless they do what I told you guys that they would do and trade for Manny Machado. But we'll see if that happens. I know that makes Randy a little salty whenever I say anything about trading away the best player on his team.
Well, it's definitely a possibility. And you mentioned Chris Taylor. He's not only playing shortstop like in Seattle, he's hitting like he was in Seattle. He's hitting 240. So to put him at shortstop now, you're asking him to do a lot because he's not even hitting well to begin with. As we're doing this podcast, Jacob DeGrom just leaves the game with an injury in the top of the fifth inning. So that's another blow to my NFBC team. So let's see what happens with that after four scoreless innings. But Randy, back on track here. You're an Orioles fan. They trade Machado. You got to get either Buehler or Verdugo back, right?
I mean, I would hope so, but I do not trust this current regime to make the right decision when it comes to trading Manny Machado or Zach Britton or Brad Brock or whoever it is that they want to trade. So yeah, I mean, the Dodgers are one of the teams that I'd like to see Machado go to because they have the most to get back. I just don't trust that team to, you know, decide, you know, to choose the best players to get in return, but that's for a whole nother podcast. You know, in the meantime, you know, Verdugo is somebody that's kind of interesting, and the Dodgers showed last year with Bellinger that if they're young guys, you know, now Verdugo's not quite the prospect that Bellinger was, but if he hits, they're going to keep him in the lineup. They showed that last year with Bellinger. When Bellinger came up, there really wasn't a spot for him long term at the time, but he just hit so well where they just had to, okay, Adrian Gonzalez, you're going to the bench, or Bellinger, you're going to have to play outfield, you know, more than we were expecting you to. So they have, and now they're in a desperate situation where they're chasing teams down. They're not the team this year that, like they've been the past few years, where teams are chasing them. So I think if Verdugo hits, you know, they'll keep him in the lineup. So he's an interesting ad. I would just, you know, it sucks for anybody to take Seager. You know, he was going anywhere between the third and the fifth round. You know, that sucks to lose a guy like that in the, you know, a month into the season, basically 5 weeks. So feel bad for Seager.
Yeah, he's a top player when he's healthy, and the health just can't seem to find him right now because he's been having nagging injuries for a while now, and this is kind of the combination of that. Another guy who has been pretty durable over his whole career, but now he has some elbow inflammation. Johnny Cueto, who had an ERA under one, I believe, coming into his next start, which obviously isn't going to happen now that he's placed on the DL. And last I heard was he's meeting with Dr. Andrews. So I know Justin Mason's not happy about this one because Cueto is doing so well. Randy, what do you got on Cueto here?
Oh, this hurts. I've been a big Cueto fan for a long time. You know, I was really buying into him bouncing back this year, and it was in the process of happening until this latest issue with his elbow. Just have my fingers crossed. You know, if it's something like Jordan Montgomery and it's 2 months, at least you're going to get him back at some point. You know, and hope he's healthy. You hear going to see Dr. James Andrews. You hear him going for a second and third opinion. That's not good. So, but like I said, my fingers are crossed, and you know, feel bad because Cueto's been somebody that I've liked for a long time.
And I saw a tweet. I can't remember who it was by. I wish I could. And they were actually making fun of the Dodgers for not being healthy, saying how old the Giants were and how they were all still healthy. And then less than 24 hours later, Cueto went on the DL with elbow inflammation. So whoever that guy was, he pretty much jinxed him. Colin, anything on Cueto here?
Yeah, I'm actually with Randy. I was on the post-hype sleeper. He's shown it his whole career. So he had this one season last year where he had blister issues. He only pitched 140 innings. So I was all on the bandwagon of him bouncing back this year. It's a tough blow. I have him in a few leagues, so it's a tough blow for him, for the Giants. I'm not sure how the Giants are going to rebound with, you know, these 30-plus-year-olds on their roster that they're counting on every day. So like we said about the Dodgers, they're in a tough spot. They're in an uphill battle to try and get back in the playoff picture. But, you know, I might hold on to Cueto. I'll stick him in my DL slot until we hear what Dr. James Andrews says. But until then, I'll probably be trying to make some different plans.
So there's been a bunch of injuries over the course of the last week, because it seems like there's injuries every day now. Sano's on the DL. Middleton, who I wanted to touch on. Randy, I know you spent $0 on him in one league before he was named closer, got him. Looked like it was going to be a great investment. Now he's hurt. He goes on a 10-day DL, and who knows how long he's going to be out for. And now they need a replacement back to square one in Los Angeles, where you got Bedrosian, Parker, Johnson. You got a couple other guys. One sneaky guy is Justin Anderson. They had a save situation last night, and Cam Bedrosian came in and blew it against your Orioles, Randy. Do you think Justin Anderson has any shot at this job?
I do, because it's Mike Socia, but I don't think we're going to be able to predict anything. It's going to kind of go back to what it was last year, I think, until Bud Norris finally, you know, grabbed that job for about 2 months there. You know, as far as Middleton goes, he said that he wasn't worried about it, that he thought it would be a minimum stay. As much as I'd like for that to be true, because like you mentioned, I did get him in the Invitational, I do not believe him one bit. You know, players usually lie about the severity of their injuries. You know, but in the meantime, unless you're in a 15 teamer, you know, or an AL only, I wouldn't even mess with this, honestly, because, you know, there was a beat reporter. I'm sorry, I don't have the guy's name in front of me, but he came out yesterday after Middleton was placed on the disabled list, basically just said he wouldn't be surprised if Anderson got the first crack at closing. Well, he was wrong, because Anderson, you know, came in a setup role and did fine. You know, he held the lead at 2-0. And then Jim Johnson even came in after him. And then Alvarez, the lefty, came in as well. And then Bedrosian proceeded to implode. So, again, I think this is just going to be a mess. Maybe Anderson gets the next crack. Maybe it's the ghost of Jim Johnson gets the next crack. That wouldn't surprise me at all, considering it is Mike Socia. So I would just avoid this for now. If you got to throw a dart in a deep league, throw a dart, I guess, at Anderson or Bedrosian. But it's not going to be pretty until Middleton gets back.
Yeah, and Anderson might be a guy to keep an eye on as far as spending your fab goes, because everybody might run to those experienced closers like Jim Johnson and pay the money for him, where you could get Anderson for cheap, and who knows, he might be the closer a week or two from now. So I know I gave you one guy that you owned, Randy, that was hurt, and Colin, I know you didn't think we were going to do this podcast without talking about Robbie Ray. Now he's on the DL. He's probably going to miss 3 to 4 weeks is what I'm hearing. It's a strained oblique, maybe longer. Talk to me about Robbie Ray, Kai. I know you have Mookie Betts on that main event team, but you also have Robbie Ray, right?
I didn't get him in the main event. Sniped him from me. So thank God for that guy. But, yeah, it's heartbreaking. I mean, you know, it's just an oblique. I know we kind of had a Twitter beef with the pitcher list, because I was on him and Nick Pollock wasn't whenever we had him as a guest on our show. So, you know, I'm hoping for the best. You know, obliques are so scary. They're very unpredictable. So, you know, he could be back in the time frame. He could be back, you know, in 5 to 8 weeks. I mean, you just never know with oblique injuries. But I think, you know, what we're getting from Patrick Corbin is kind of supplementing the fact of what we were expecting to get from Robbie Ray. So if you were lucky enough to pick him up in your draft or pick him up off the FAB or waiver wire, he's providing you with what everyone thought that Robbie Ray would be.
And I know Randy wasn't the biggest Robbie Ray supporter during the preseason, so I think Robbie Ray's final numbers might lean a little towards Randy's prediction, more towards Randy's prediction than yours.
Well, Colin, I'm just disappointed that it's not that Colin can use the injury, you know, disclaimer at the end of the season because Robbie Ray was trending directly towards being a bust, not so much being a bust, but just being, you know, what he was every year outside of last year, and I was going to be right, and now I'm going to have to wait until next year, and he's going to have a bad, you know, he's going to have a 4 ERA next year and walk everybody. And then I'm going to have to wait a whole other year for Colin to admit that he was wrong. So
he definitely might get that treatment as far as next year goes. If he does have an injury-ridden season, people say he's going to bounce back. He's a bounce-back candidate. So it's going to take some time to figure out how this one plays out. But we'll definitely remember all the things Colin said in the preseason. So I hope you guys read all the tweets about this, the listeners and you guys alike. Trevor Bauer goes on a tangent the other day about spin rates and foreign substances. Now, there's 20 different elements to this, and people are chiming in from all different aspects. I know Eno Saris wrote a great article for The Athletic about this that Trevor Bauer actually agreed on. Alex Bregman pretty much called him out. He called him Tyler, which was pretty funny. They even changed his Wikipedia name to Tyler. I don't know if you guys saw that. Lance McCullers went after him, saying jealousy's not a good look. Basically, Bauer's argument was that he wasn't allowed to use surgical-grade stuff on his finger that he hurt last year in the postseason with his drone, because they said it was going to affect the spin rate, but other guys are using pine tar and sunscreen and other stuff that's proven to affect the spin rate. So he's kind of has the right message, but he wasn't portraying it correctly. So there's been a bunch of studies done. Let me just get your guys' opinion before I go more into this. Colin, what do you think about this whole Bauer and the Astros?
I think what Lance McCullers said was probably what he was the best comment. You know, jealousy doesn't look good on you. I mean, there is, you know, an eyebrow raised at all of the Houston Astros pitchers just kind of performing to another level where they haven't in their careers, like a Charlie Morton, who's resurrected his career. And I know the Pitching Ninja said something like, you know, a sticky substance doesn't make your fastball go up 10 miles per hour. So, you know, there's him, there's Garrett Cole, who's off to a great start. And then, of course, Justin Verlander, who's just continued on his path and maybe even gotten better since he came to Houston. So, you know, Trevor Bauer might be trying to get an inside leak on information from them to see what's actually going on behind the scenes. But it is pretty funny whenever you see, you know, major league players that just go at each other and kind of just look like a regular everyday guy like you and I.
Yeah, and so a little bit of background on Bauer. He's like a sabermetrics junkie pretty much. He wants to know every stat about everything that's going on in the game, which is great to see from an actual player and not just from a bystander, because the fact that these players are really into this stuff is pretty cool. And I'm trying to find the tweet now. Somebody said that they tested pine tar, sunscreen, and something else to see spin rates. When I find the tweet, I'll read it to you. Randy, what do you think about this whole Trevor Bauer thing?
I mean, it's entertaining for us as fans, but it doesn't look good on Bauer. And I don't think there's, you know, for fantasy owners, I wouldn't be looking to sell my Astros pitchers thinking that some, you know, the hammer is going to come down and all these guys are going to get suspended or anything. If it happens, it happens. You know, they wouldn't be the first team. Yeah, they wouldn't be the first pitchers to do it. They're not going to be the last. I think Bauer just looks really, really bad in all this.
So basically what he was saying was he wasn't calling out the Astros. He was just pretty upset about his whole deal that he wasn't able to use the surgical grade substance on his finger. So it's kind of been a whole big thing. And the way it lines up now, and I think one of the series is pretty far away, but Bauer won't see the Astros the next two series that they play Cleveland. So we might not be able to see the after effects of this. Who knows what's going on internally, the stuff we don't see. But that's definitely been a big topic on Twitter. Another big topic on Twitter, and it actually takes place tonight. Bryce Harper hits another home run in the leadoff spot, his second home run. And Rizzo gets moved to leadoff spot. He hits another home run. He hits a home run. He's been having a dreadful season. Do you think this kind of helps their value? Because it seems like the way baseball is trending, your best hitter was in the third spot, and then they moved up to the second spot, and now the best hitter is batting leadoff. Do you think this helps their value, Randy?
I don't I mean, if it gets them, if something in their mental makeup, it makes them, it kind of gets them going, then yeah, it helps their value. But I don't really think the spot in the order, as long as it's in the first four, really affects their value one way or the other. I mean, if they stay in the leadoff spot all year, you know, runs will tick up a little bit. RBIs will obviously, especially in the National League, you know, tick down a little bit. But I don't, you know, especially with Harper, you know, Murphy has rejoined the team and looks like he's only, you know, a couple of weeks away. And same thing with Rendon. Rendon could be back, you know, within the next week. So I don't see him staying. I don't see Harper staying up there long term. And Joe Maddon, you know, he changes the lineup like he changes the socks. So I wouldn't expect Rizzo to stay up there too much longer.
So Colin, Rizzo's hitting 154, and that was his second home run, and he only has 9 RBIs. He's only played 19 games, has 89 plate appearances. This is got to be some sort of an anomaly for Rizzo, right? He's going to end up having the 30-100 season he's had for the last 3 years, or at least the 30-90 season he's had for the last 3 years.
Yeah, he should. I mean, like Randy was saying, you know, Joe Maddon's going to play with that lineup a little bit. I know on the broadcast they said that he's probably, I think he's had 15 games of such as a leadoff hitter, and so it might just be to kind of get his mind off of driving everyone in and kind of get back to seeing the baseball. But the interesting thing with Harper is he wasn't struggling where he was at. I mean, he was arguably the best player in baseball the first, you know, few weeks in the season. So, but it is interesting what they've done with their lineup. I mean, they have Harper batting first, and this is just based off of yesterday's game, Trey in the second hole, and then they had their pitcher bat eighth. So it's kind of like having a leadoff guy in front of Bryce Harper in the nine hole whenever he comes up in the middle of the game. So that's something interesting as well. And I know we have a running joke in our chat about, you know, Manny Machado only getting solo home runs because no one can get on base in front of him. And then Randy had the argument today, what about Mookie Betts? Well, you know, he has so many people behind him that are just as good, if not better, in JD Martinez, you know. So, and that lineup is just so stacked. But you might see a few more solo home runs. You might see more runs, like Randy was saying. But, you know, putting your best player at the top of the lineup has always been a thing. You know, they're trying to get people that get on base the most in the first hole. And then, like you were saying, whenever they get Daniel Murphy back, that lineup is just going to be that much better.
And something to consider with Rizzo here, he's walked 4 times in 89 plate appearances this year, which is absurd that his walk rate is 4.5%. He's never been a huge walker, but this is just some insane stuff that he's only walked 4 times in 89 appearances. So that's something to keep an eye on. One other thing I wanted to ask you guys, Ken Giles last night comes in a 0-0 game, gives up a 3-run homer to Gary Sanchez, gives up a single to Aaron Hicks, I think it was, and then he's walking off the field and he punches himself in the face. Colin, have you ever got so angry about anything that you punch yourself in the face?
Not yet, but I haven't given up a 3-run home run in, you know, in a baseball game before, but it was pretty comical. And I know we've talked about Ken Giles a lot on this podcast, how I don't believe in him, and this kind of stuff just kind of pushes the needle towards me, because the Astros don't need that in their clubhouse. They don't need a guy that's going to be a fireball and can't perform on the field as well. I know he had a few outings lately, like 7 straight outings without giving up a hit, but there's always going to be this blow up in sight. And then, you know, if he breaks his jaw doing that the next time, then, you know, he's just going to go on the DL. So
you got to be pretty angry with yourself to punch yourself in the face. Randy, I'm assuming you've never punched yourself in the face either.
No, never done that. I do think Giles did that, you know, to kind of help his fantasy owners out so they wouldn't do it for him. Yeah. You know, for everybody that drafted him. So it's, yeah, you know, like I said, we'll see where it goes from here in Houston, but I wouldn't be surprised if this is the last save chance Giles gets for a couple weeks.
Yeah, I think they need to move on from him as a whole. I think he'd benefit with a change of scenario as well. So let's transition into some guys that are doing very good hitting and doing very good pitching. Maybe not the top picks of your draft here, but I want to know from you guys if you think they're going to keep it up or not keep it up. Do you believe in them? And starting with AJ Pollock, who's absolutely on fire. This guy hit 3 home runs 2 nights ago. Then he faces Kershaw last night, hits a homer in his first at bat. He's hitting 292 with 10 homers, 25 RBIs, 7 stolen bases. I think he's the only player in the majors right now with 10 home runs and 7 stolen bases. Are you buying what AJ Pollock's doing here, Randy?
Yeah, Pollock is somebody I've always really liked. He's just, you know, the health has always been a question with him. You know, I don't sit by him as a huge power guy. You know, his home run to fly ball rate is through the roof right now, obviously, you know, with having 10 home runs this early into the season. But if he's somebody that's going to, you know, he's gotten close to 20 in the past. Actually, he had a 20 home run season. But if he's going to get into that range, if he's going to be healthy all season, he's performed, you know, like a borderline, like second round pick or so. So if you're a Pollock owner, I would, you know, I'm not looking to sell high, you know, or anything, because most owners know, you know, Pollock's injury history. So I'm just enjoying it for now. I got my fingers crossed that you can get 100 and, you know, even 145-ish games. I'm not going to get greedy and say he plays 160, but, you know, maybe 140, 145 would be great. And, you know, Pollock's a really good player, so I'm enjoying it as somebody that's got a couple shares.
So, Colin, in AJ Pollock's 2015 season, he went 315, 20, 76 with 39 stolen bases. I'm assuming he's not going to steal 39 bases again. That's a little bit of a stretch. But do you think he could hit 315 with 20 homers and 75 RBIs over the season? Definitely, right?
Maybe. I might be on the different side of the bench on AJ Pollock, so I would probably be trying to sell high. I think that he's provided most of his home runs this week, and I see it probably being hard for him to reach the 20 home run milestone. Like you said, he's only done it one time in his career. And there was a lot of ifs in your analysis, Randy, and that's the big thing with him, is if he stays healthy, if he stays on the field, if the Diamondbacks don't rest him due to his injury history, and if, you know, he stays at the top of that lineup. There's so many ifs with him that once he goes on this tear, which, you know, he's a great player, don't get me wrong, but this is something uncharacteristic of him to, you know, belt a 3-home run game, to have this power. So if I'm selling high, you know, I'm trying to get, you know, top 10 outfielder or top 50 overall player, and, you know, having someone else deal with that injury concern that he's provided the past couple seasons.
So, Colin, you don't think he's going to hit 10 more homers the rest of the season? It's only been 28 games.
Yeah, I don't think so. I mean, I think you might have gotten the most out of him. He might struggle to hit 5 more the rest of the year. Randy, I could be wrong on that. Ooh, but
that's,
Randy, do you think Colin's bold. Crazy? Because I think Colin's crazy.
I mean, if he plays, you know, as long as he doesn't, you know, blow his knee out tonight, I mean, yeah, he's going to hit more than 5 home runs the rest of the way.
So here come the
he's
ifs.
He's going to hit more than 10.
Here come the ifs.
Well, I mean, you can say that anybody. Anybody can go out and blow their elbow out, blow their knee out.
Yeah, but he plays 100 games this season. That means he's playing 70 more.
Yeah, yeah. Colin's just salty that somebody on the Diamondbacks not named Robbie Ray is doing well.
So. I think Robbie Ray could be locked. I think AJ Pollock could be locked in for 20 home runs barring injury at this point. A guy who probably won't be locked in for 20 home runs. I don't know how you guys are going to feel about this. Jed Lowrie is hitting 336 with 7 homers and 28 RBIs. There's no way he's hitting 20 home runs, right, Colin?
No, there's no way. I mean, he's a platoon player, you know, at best. Right now you're getting the best production out of the platoon. You know, pretty soon Oakland's going to want to infuse all their young talent. They have a lot of young middle infielders, you know, in the minor leagues right now. So as soon as he goes on the DL, which is inevitable, or as soon as he starts to slump, you know, he's probably a career 260, 270 hitter, and he's hitting 336 right now. So, you know, he might not get to 10 home runs.
Yeah, and his BABIP's at 375, although he did hit a home run on Felix Hernandez yesterday, so he's got to be pretty good. Randy, what do you think about Jed Lowrie?
My stance hasn't changed since we brought him up a couple of weeks ago. Just enjoy it. I mean, it's lasting a little longer than we thought. Hopefully he gets to face, you know, Felix a few more times. That'd be really nice for anybody's numbers. But again, just keep enjoying Lowrie while he's doing this, and eventually it'll cool off, and you know, owners can move on.
And it's May now. Who knows? Maybe we're still saying the same thing about Jed Lowrie next month, and the joke turns out to be on us, because I don't think any of the three of us think he could sustain this. One guy that I do think could sustain his success so far is Mitch Haniger.
And of course you do.
He's hitting 303 with 10 homers, 27 RBIs. I like to call him MVP Mitch, because before he got hurt last year, when he was off to that torrid start, he was actually in the Vegas books getting odds for MVP votes. He was like the last one on the list, but he was on the paper at Bovada as far as getting MVP. You could bet him for MVP. What do you think about MVP Mitch, Randy?
Yeah, on the podcast that we did last week while you were on vacation with Mike Alexander, we spent a good bit of time on Haniger, and he was somebody that I was buying into what he's done so far this season. You know, he's made a few adjustments. He's hitting the ball in the air more, hitting the ball harder. You know, and he like you brought up, Mike, you know, he played well last year before he started getting hurt. And I think he's, you know, kind of not the same type of player as AJ Pollock, obviously, but he falls in that same boat where just keep your fingers crossed and hope that you can get 140 couple games out of him. You know, hopefully he can avoid the big long DL stint. Maybe they give him an extra day off here and there throughout the season to kind of maintain him. But I'm really happy with the couple Haniger shares that I have, and I think it's legit.
Yeah, and I could see the comparison with him and Pollock as far as they'll be really good if they're healthy. What do you think about him, Colin?
Yeah, surprisingly, me and Randy agreed on that podcast. So we've been doing a lot of agreeing lately. That's got to change here pretty soon. But, you know, with the Seattle lineup, there's a lot of people that are frail, in my opinion, with Nelson Cruz, Kyle Seager, Gene Segura, and then, you know, the list goes on and on, Ryan Healy. So, you know, I think that was one of the big things coming into the season is where is this guy going to hit? So, you know, whenever Nelly Cruz was out for a while, he was batting cleanup. And he produced. It looks like he's producing everywhere they put him in the lineup. And I was on the same boat with Randy that, you know, I believed in the breakout last year before he got hurt. And then he came back after he was fully healthy and kind of provided the same stats. And he's just kind of building off of that now. So I'm hoping we can get the full season version of Mitch Haniger. I'm not going to go as far to say MVP, maybe MVP of the Seattle Mariners, which isn't too hard. Although you do have D. Gordon, who has, what, 10 hits in his last 10 at-bats.
Nine in his last 10, yeah.
Yeah, so, you know, Mitch Haniger, I'm trying to buy him anywhere I can if I had the opportunity to.
Yeah, that was one of the better things the Mariners ever did. They got Mitch Haniger and Gene Segura for Taiwan Walker and Ketel Marte. So that definitely played in their favor so far with Walker's injury and Marte being kind of spotty as far as he goes. Another guy that's on this list of guys who are still hitting is Jose Peraza. And this might be the Jose Peraza everybody was expecting last year or everybody is really hoping for. He's hitting .296 now with 5 stolen bases. What do you think about Peraza, Randy?
Yeah, I think he's kind of performing similar to how he was in the second half of 2016 when everybody fell in love with him. You know, draft price went through the roof last year once Brandon Phillips was gone and he was going to have everyday playing time, and Peraza kind of fell on his face because he's not a very good hitter, but he's somebody that kind of profile with the speed and everything, he could have a pretty high BABIP, and he doesn't even really have that high of a BABIP so far this season compared to what he had in 16. You know, so he had two of those 5 steals came in a game, you know, last night. So, you know, you take those away, maybe it doesn't look as good, but, you know, he's definitely worth a spot as a middle in pretty much anything 12 team or bigger. And, you know, maybe he's somebody that gets kind of rediscovers things that he was in 16. You know, maybe he's hitting the ball on the ground a little more, getting a few more infield hits. But, you know, it's not a very attractive profile. He doesn't walk a lot. At least he doesn't strike out a lot. So there is the potential for a high BABIP if he's going to be putting the ball in play consistently. So, you know, steals are scarce. And if he's going to get everyday playing time and hitting towards the top of the order, you know, we'll take it.
Well, he's hitting 296 with 5 stolen bases. Billy Hamilton's hitting 187 with 5 stolen bases. Colin, talk to me a little bit about Peraza. You think this lasts?
He's definitely a post-hype sleeper because, like Randy said last year, he just kind of skyrocketed up the boards as soon as they let Brandon Phillips go. But a guy that has a 45% ground ball percentage and has so much soft contact, I know he's a speedster, but it's mostly luck. You know, in my opinion, you know, with Billy Hamilton, he's just not a good hitter. So that kind of makes sense. But Jose Peraza, he keeps the ball on the ground too much. He's fast. So whenever he does ground out, you know, for most people, he might beat it out at the first base. But, you know, with the Reds, they have a weird rotation with their outfield and with their infield. And that's before Nick Senzel comes up. So whenever he comes up, I think it's just going to muddy the water some more. So if I can get anything for him, maybe someone buys the playing time, maybe someone buys him being a 40 steal option, which I don't, then I'll probably trade him and just pick up, you know, the next sexy guy that provides steals off the waiver wire.
Yeah, speed's definitely a factor when it comes to Peraza. So as long as he's running and hitting with a decently high average, he'll definitely be valuable. Heading over to the pitching side of things, let's start with Sean Manaea, whose ERA is a 1.03 in 43.2 innings. He has 37 strikeouts. He's facing the Mariners, I think it's for the second time this year, coming up this week. So this will be another good test for him. What are your thoughts on Manaea, Randy? And you think this is a thing that he could sustain all season?
Yeah, the theme of this podcast is going to kind of be they're really good as long as they're healthy, because that's kind of how I've felt. That's kind of how I felt about Manaea, you know, throughout his career. There was an issue last year where he had some type of an illness that caused him to lose a good bit of weight, and his, you know, performance really tailed off there in the second half. But, you know, he's somebody that has a pretty good pedigree. The strikeout rate is still, you know, performing pretty well, but he's been able to drop the walk rate, which is something you really like to see, because walks have kind of been a little bit his issue there in the past. So as long as he can stay healthy, it's a good park to pitch in. You know, division wise, you know, all joking aside, the Mariners are a pretty tough matchup when they're healthy, especially for left-handed pitching. You know, you've got Houston there. You know, Texas, you know, is somebody that you can pick on right now, especially with all their injuries. You know, so it's a good enough spot for him, if, you know, to be in the American League. I'm a big fan of Manaea as long as he's healthy.
Yeah, what do you think about Mr. No-Hitter here, Colin?
Sell high. You know, I haven't been on him since he's been a top prospect. I always thought that he walked too many people, which is kind of funny coming from me whenever I'm a Robbie Ray fan. But anyways... he's left 98% of his guys on base that get on base against him, and he's a career 70% guy in that matter. So, you know, that's going to regress. It's going to regress down to probably about 70 or 65%. So that means that he's going to be giving up a lot more runs, and it's going to come a lot quicker than most of his owners want. So if you can still get the no-hitter value for him, then I'm definitely trying to sell if I can get a good bat, or if I can get, you know, a better pitcher than him that's going to provide me season-long numbers, then I'm going to try and do that. What do you think about that, Randy?
Yeah, I mean, I think obviously the strand rate is going to regress. He's not going to finish the season with a 1.03 right now, a 1.03 ERA. But the thing that has me excited is, you know, we're already to the point of the season where the strikeout rates and the walk rates are starting to stabilize a little bit. And his strikeout rate's at 23%, which is exactly what you want to see, but the walk rate is down to 4.5%, where if he kept that throughout the season, that would be a career low by a full percent, which is, that again, that's kind of been the, you know, the issue with Manaea in the past. So even, you know, when the strand rate does normalize, there's, you know, with the walks being down, that's what has me excited about him going forward. So yeah, his ERA is not going to stay one all year. You're right. You know, nobody keeps a 90, you know, what you say was 98% strand rate all year, but you know, the walks are the big thing, are going to be the big thing with him.
Yeah, he has a minimal increase in his K percentage, but I think that that walk percentage is probably going to level out. I mean, he's had some free-swinging teams that he goes up against. I know Boston is a pretty high contact team, so to no-hit them is definitely an accomplishment, but he's going to run into, you know, some powerhouses later in the year. He plays in Houston's division, so he's going to get to see them plenty. And then once Texas gets Willie Calhoun up, we're going to be right on the map. going to the World Series. So he's going to have some tough matchups, and he's in that hard division where he has to face the Astros and the Angels and the Mariners and the Rangers as well.
Listen, I know video game World Series don't count, Colin.
I know it's not saying much, but over the last two seasons, Manaea does have the best WAR among Oakland Athletics starting pitchers.
Yeah, so that's not saying much.
That's not
all.
Saying much, but he still had to pitch to achieve that. One other guy I wanted to talk about is Rick Porcello, former Cy Young winner, and he has a 2.2 ERA in 40 innings. He has 38 strikeouts. Are we going to see another Cy Young type season from Rick Porcello, Randy?
I mean, maybe. As crazy as that sounds, maybe. But, you know, Porcello is somebody that I've never really been a huge fan of. You know, I kind of feel like there's been certain years where I'm like, yes, Porcello is just a guy. There's nothing to get excited about. And then, you know, he'll sneak one of those, you know, one of those years in where it's just like, oh, man, I guess I do have to really pay attention to Porcello. But he hasn't, you know, he's not a guy that gives up a lot of home runs. But right now his home run to fly ball rate is 2.6%. That's obviously not going to stay there. You know, for his career, he's usually around 11 or 12% on average. You know, but the fact that the strikeouts have ticked up, you know, a couple percent this year, it makes it interesting to the point where I think there's a real scenario that he's a top 30 starting pitcher this year if that K rate, you know, stays the same, you know, kind of stays where it's at. Because that's been the issue with Porcello in the past is, you know, when he does give up runs, you're not getting the strikeouts to kind of offset if he has a couple of bad starts. So it's, if something monitoring for, we could be looking at a top 30 starter this year somehow.
And his BABIP's at 260, which isn't far off from his Cy Young season. Do you think this is sustainable, Colin?
No, he's been a guy that's shown it in flashes, and with a guy that's shown it in flashes for this long in his career, I mean, he's been pitching in the majors since 2009, so we pretty much know the guy that Rick Porcello is. And so I kind of took advantage of that this offseason. I had a roster where I needed some pitching, needed some inning horses, so I traded Josh Reddick for Rick Porcello, and then after this most recent start, I flipped him for Domingo Santana in a dynasty league. So, you know, he's the kind of guy that, you know, you want to ride it a little bit, and then once you kind of start to feel the boat rocking a little bit, then I'm going to jump off. I know that his stats are kind of in line with what he did in 2016 as a Cy Young winner. His ground ball percentage is even up almost 7%, but his home run to fly ball percent right now is 2.6, and everyone knows that that's not going to last, especially whenever it starts to get a little bit hotter in Boston. So he's a guy that I'm looking to sell. I think I got the most that I can out of him right now. So if you can sell him for, you know, a bat like Domingo Santana, someone that's slumping right now, or a more proven starting pitcher that's shown it through the whole season and seasons in a row, then that's probably who I'll do.
Yeah, and I definitely like that trade for you. Get Domingo Santana is pretty much a steal, I think, for Rick Porcello. Unless Porcello does have that Cy Young season that nobody expected 2 years ago and nobody expects now. Another guy who nobody expected to have a Cy Young season, and he's off to a very good start so far, is Charlie Morton, who in 36.2 innings has a 1.72 ERA. And this guy is just phenomenal. Everything about him has been great. His spin rates have been great. Everything's been great. Randy, talk to me a little bit about Morton.
Yeah, and everything's legit. You know, it's backed up by a 3.01 Sierra. He's getting a swinging strike rate of almost 14%. And, you know, again, theme of the podcast, when he's healthy, you know, you want him out there. You know, he's somebody that, you know, has had a major injury issues in the past. You know, for somebody that's been in the league as long as he only has one season with 170 innings pitched or more, for somebody that's been in the big league since 2008. But, you know, keep riding with Morton. You know, keep your fingers crossed that he can stay healthy. But everything he's doing is 100% legit, and as long as he's healthy, I expect it to continue.
And I know Verlander's the guy everybody wants to talk about in that Houston rotation, but Morton's making his presence felt for sure. What do you think, Colin?
I think I missed the boat on Charlie Morton. I was not believing what he showed last year. And just put this in perspective. If I told you a pitcher in his rookie season in 2008 was throwing his fastball at 91 miles per hour, what would you think he'd be throwing in 2018? Definitely not 97 miles per hour, which he's shown on a start-to-start basis. So that's something that's just crazy. It's a testament to the Houston Astros staff. He did start to uptick his velocity whenever he was with the Phillies in 2016. He got to 94 miles per hour. Just his increase in miles per hour and his fastball. He's been throwing his curveball, which it just looks like it falls off the table, and that's probably a testament to Houston again. So, like I said, I think I missed the boat. I'll probably be trying to buy him, although I think the owner of Charlie Morton, like you said, might be in contention for the Cy Young, and that's what they're thinking, so they're probably going to ask for a king's ransom. But, you know, it's just crazy to think that you can go up, you know, 7 miles per hour after being in the league for 10, 11 years and have the injury issues that he's had in the past.
So I hate to change the topic on you here, Colin, but some news about Jacob deGrom. And this is from Dr. Jesse Morse, who's part of the Fantasy Doctors on Twitter, which is a pretty good follow. They cover pretty much every injury that happens in sports. And it says, hyperextended right pitching elbow for deGrom. This can potentially damage his ligaments and structures in the elbow. Expect him to get an MRI. This is a big deal. So this really isn't good news for DeGrom, DeGrom owners. This kills my NFBC team, considering that my three starting pitchers were Sale, DeGrom, and Montgomery. So this is terrible news for me, and I'm sure we'll definitely be talking about DeGrom on the next podcast, however this turns out. Two more guys I want to talk about as we wrap up here. Hyunjin Ryu has a 2.22 ERA. And he's been really good over 28 innings. And Blake Snell has a 2.55 ERA over 42 innings coming into the podcast. If you would have one guy out of the two, Colin, who would you take, Ryu or Snell?
Blake Snell. I was on him in the offseason as a guy that I'm taking late in drafts, just just on the off chance that he figured out his control issues. And I think so far he has. I mean, he hasn't been striking out as many people as he was whenever he had the control issues, but that's fine with me because he's going later in the game. He's providing, you know, a 2.52 ERA right now. And so he's still providing a 10 K per nine, which is still excellent, but it's not what we saw last year. But I think that just shows his development. I think that shows that, you know, he knows that he can't be as erratic as he was last year and still make it deep in the ballgame. So Ryu has shown it in the past. He's coming off an injury, so there is a chance that maybe his struggles last year were just due to the injury. But I'm going to hedge my bets with the younger guy who's making adjustments and only getting better in my eyes.
What do you think, Randy? Snell or Ryu?
Yeah, it's Snell for me. It's really not all that close. You know, Snell is somebody that really improved, you know, what he was doing in the second half of last year, and coming into draft season, was, you know, if you were on Blake Snell, you're thinking, oh, well, he turned things around the second half, moved a spot on the rubber, you know, went down to the minor leagues, made a couple adjustments, and, you know, you saw what he was able to do in the second half. But he is, not only has he kept that going, he is, he's extended on that. He's kind of become, you know, it looks like he's trending towards that top echelon pitcher that people thought he could be, you know, as he was coming up through the Rays system. So it's 100% him for me. And Ryu, you know, he's been nice so far this season. And he's another, you know, another guy, when he's healthy, he's good. So, you know, if you enjoy Ryu while you have him, the Dodgers are obviously, they're going to use the DL, you know, more than any other team. But that could be good. That could be why, you know, some of these guys, you know, that they have like Ryu are performing a little better because they're more fresh. If they have a little something going on, they don't hesitate to put him on the disabled list. So enjoy Ryu for now. But like, it's 100% Snell for me.
Yeah, so that wraps up the show. If you guys want to just give your Twitters, Colin, starting with you, or anything you're working on or your thoughts about baseball this upcoming week.
Yeah, you can find me at CWeatherwax13. And I know, you know, y'all kind of dogged on me on Robbie Ray and how I get a pass because he's injured. Well, you're also getting a pass, Randy, because Jonathan Scope's injured and he's not completely derailing the Baltimore Orioles to where they have to sell everyone. So there's that as well. And then one other piece of breaking news that came out during this podcast is Walker Buehler is expected to start Friday against the Padres. I'm thinking if he's available anywhere, go pick him up. I mean, he's a guy that's been electric every time he's stepped on the mound for the Dodgers, and they just need to make an opening for him. If they have to go to a 6-man rotation, it might be the best for all of them, but he deserves to be starting in their rotation right now.
Randy, what about you? Just give the listeners your Twitter real quick.
Yeah, I'm on Twitter at RTH222, doing a weekly pitching column for 2-start pitchers and streamers for Friends of Fantasy Benefits. Comes out Monday morning. That's what we've got going on now.
Yeah, so Colin, I just want you to know, as this podcast is going on, I'm about to put up a poll on Twitter, and it actually says, we just recorded this week's Dirt Dogs podcast for Fantasy Benefits, and Colin Weatherwax said AJ Pollock won't hit 20 home runs. How crazy is he? And there's going to be different types of crazy for choices. The first one will be Kanye West crazy. I'll think of the other two right before we get off the air.
Let's go with Jeffrey Dahmer. We'll put that one in there.
Oh, man.
I might get flagged on Twitter if I put
it. Got dark real fast.
I think Kanye West crazy will win, though. That's the one I'm hoping wins. But you guys
can one thing I did have for the listeners. As of right now, I will be at Camden Yards next Wednesday the 9th, and the scheduled pitching matchup is Chris Tillman versus Eric Skoglund, and I could not be more thrilled to watch that classic, which should be an instant classic of a pitcher's duel.
Is that one of the free games that they're just letting anyone come in just because?
No. Unfortunately, in the preseason, me and a good friend of mine were trying to map out some games we thought we could go to early in the season that we thought, you know, might be like sneaky decent for the for the playoff race that we thought could happen. And we're like, oh, well, they'll definitely be Kansas City, and it's on a Wednesday night, so we'll get good tickets. But now we get to see Chris Tillman versus Eric Skoglund.
Well, he might be your ace, so there's that.
if there's one pitcher worse than Chris Tillman, it might be Eric Skoglund.
Yeah, so exactly. Yeah, the Orioles actually have a pitching advantage for once. So,
so follow me on Twitter, Mike the Rotocop, and check out everything we're doing. I'm doing the streamer article at Pitchers List, like Randy's doing the streamer article for Friends of Fantasy Benefits, and we'll see you guys next week. Appreciate it.